Hot round! Red 7, Red 7, Red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what Red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame-ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you gonna get me the
ball? I'll get you the ball. I
hope he didn't kill somebody.
When we add up all those inches, that's gonna make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Y'all it for me. Bottle key popping that water, man. Y'all jacking. It's a party, it's a party, it's a party.
This is 11 Personnel.
Big week.
Bum, bum, bum. Florida Gators coming to town to take on your University of Kentucky Wildcats. But there's just so much happening. You've got a new quarterback. You've got a new pass rusher. You've got a good defensive line. You've got a good offensive line. There's tons of great matchups. But before we begin, Adam Luckett, I'd be remiss if I didn't start by crowning the 2019 Heisman Trophy winner, Joe Burrow.
How about him?
What a guy.
Joey football.
It's weird. LSU has a quarterback.
Yeah, it's kind of nice, ain't it?
I know. They've been trying to get one for, I don't know.
Yeah, he's in the running for to be the September Heisman.
Hey, you know what? And that's when they give out the Heisman, too. September. It's when, if anything, that's when the winners really rise to the top. But that was a... I was surprised at how boring Saturday slate was, because on paper it was like, oh, this could be pretty good. And even though it was kind of nice to see what the score was going on during the UK game, aside from that LSU game, not a whole lot. I mean, I guess we got
another Tennessee melt, Nebraska meltdown in Colorado.
Oh, you mean Scott Frost blew it?
Yeah.
What a shock. And then our good friends at Michigan.
Yeah, we almost got a big upset in the new slot.
Man. Army really, I really wanted it for him, man. But You just can't. You can't call a pass play in the red zone. Like, what are you doing? You can't call a pass play ever, let alone in
Army
the red
had
zone.
A couple calls in that game. If they go the other way, they might have ran away with it. And Michigan, just the new offense looked pretty sluggish. And then you see that their new offensive coordinator, Josh Gattis, got into it with Alabama's old offensive coordinator, Mike Loxley, who's at Maryland now.
Yep.
And now his team, through two games, is leading the country in scoring. They just dropped a 50-burger plus a baker's dozen on Syracuse last week.
That's 63?
Yes. So now his team leads the country in scoring offense, and then you see Gattis at Michigan. Shea Patterson struggling.
They stink.
They're supposed to have a good O-line, but they're not really running the ball in their first two games.
Yeah.
Defense is rebuilding a bit because they lost a lot off last year's defense. So they have a bye this week. Much needed bye, I would say.
Then they go to much needed bye after playing Army.
And then they go to Madison next week for a big game. So maybe Harbaugh can get some things figured out. They're in a tough phase. So yeah. Last Saturday, it was a weird Saturday because the noon slate was mostly blowouts.
Yeah, we had a couple redemption stories with Purdue and Missouri. Mm-hmm.
Purdue ran away from Vanderbilt. Missouri was – that game was over from the kickoff.
Also, Vanderbilt, why are you taking out Riley Neal? Like, he's not bad. You just suck at coaching Derek Mason. Like, get your players to not commit stupid penalties.
The thing with Vanderbilt was in that game, they couldn't eat the clock. They couldn't get the run game
at all.
So they were getting big plays and really keeping up with Purdue from a first downs and yardage standpoint. But they just didn't have the defense to stop Rondell Moore, and he had a huge game.
Yeah,
we've seen all the highlights.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move to the 3:30 slot. Texas A&M, Clemson was just ho-hum. Kellen.
Jimbo just coming in with a backdoor cover.
Yeah.
That's his favorite thing to do.
Kellen Mond sounded like he stunk up the joint.
Oh, man. That fumble, he had one that was just really bad. He didn't play well at all.
But Trevor Lawrence he's just looked pedestrian through two games, as pedestrian as he can look.
Right. Because really, Joe Burrow is the Heisman Trophy winner.
It's been other people.
That's a fact.
And then at the night, you know, you had LSU, Texas. Really, I think passing numbers was a big thing, what LSU did, but it was also 1,000 degrees there. Defenders were dropping like flies there in the second half. That's why I thought you saw so many teams, saw those two teams trading blows. Mm-hmm. Where in the first half, LSU's defense kind of owned the game, and LSU had a 27 halftime lead. But you got to give Burrow credit. Third and 17. LSU easily could have been like, okay, let's run draw. Let's try to flip the field, pin Texas back deep. They hadn't really stopped Texas that whole half. They call play. Burrow delivers a dime to Justin Jefferson, touchdown. Bam plays. LSU gets 2-0.
Well, that was in the nightcap, though.
Yeah, and then we're getting to.
It wasn't Pac-12 after dark. It was Pac-12 after, Pac-12 Sunday morning.
Pac-12 and eggs.
Did you? All right, I know the answer to this question, but did you stay up and watch all of Cal State? Oh man!
As soon as I got home from Lexington,
Cal Washington. It didn't start until a lightning delay made it start at 10:30 Pacific time, which is 1:30 Eastern.
Mm-hmm.
I got in. That was about what time we left the Croak, right around 1:30, something like that. So we got in just in time for like second half ish.
Beginning, it was like 10 minutes left in the third quarter, I think, when I walked in the door.
Yeah. And I basically, that was my soundtrack to Snooze Fest. But I didn't expect to get an upset.
I didn't either.
Which I guess that's what happens when you're playing a top 25 team on the road and all their fans leave because it's a four-hour lightning delay. Kind of puts a damper on things for the home field
advantage. But it's kind of Pac-12 situation with the playoff.
Yeah. They're screwed.
Oregon goes down week one. Washington was the second team who had a very nice schedule.
USC and Utah. They're the last two standing.
Now you see USC and Utah as being the kind of undefeated teams carrying the water for the conference. Yeah. Don't sleep on Mike Leach. He's got another really good offense.
Yeah.
But,
Gardner Minshew's a Jacksonville Jaguar starting quarterback now.
Look at that.
Now.
QB1, Jacksonville. Yeah. AFC South, look out. And then, of course, the other thing was Tennessee. Another meltdown. Blew a double-digit lead. Only scored one offensive touchdown in regulation.
Jeremy Pruitt's 5-9.
He's 5-9 as a head coach. That's with some bad losses. And he's saying some stuff that is not really making much sense. He's starting to seem like a guy that's kind of in over his head.
Oh, yeah. He was always in over his head when it came to the media. Like, he did that thing this year where he talked for 25 minutes or whatever in his opening speech at SEC Media Days because he just thinks it's hilarious to try to mess with the media, and it's just because he stinks at it. He's not good at it. When he does talk, he compares his program to the Titanic sinking. So that's what you get with Jeremy Pruitt. You get a lot of losing, a lot of depressed Tennessee fans, and you hate to see it, Adam Luckett. You really do.
Yeah, they don't look good.
Nope.
And you look at his tenure as a whole, they had two weird wins, Kentucky and Auburn last year, where they kind of rose up.
Mm-hmm.
And one is a big double-digit underdogs, but they've also had some games where they've just kind of blah.
Yep.
You know, the two this year. They had Missouri at home the week after they beat Kentucky. They drop an egg, lose by like 30-something points.
Mm-hmm.
They go to Vanderbilt the next week, lose by three touchdowns or something. And then, so they've had a lot of – they have Florida at home last year, Florida coming off that Kentucky loss, kind of the boat shaking a little bit, and they go into Knoxville and just hammer Tennessee. So it's not looking good for him.
No, not looking good at all for Jeremy Pruitt. It is looking good, kind of good for the Kentucky Wildcats, who beat Eastern Michigan. And this week, I wanted to try another segment because I forgot what I said last week, forgot what I predicted, because so much things happened in this game. So we're going to do the good, the bad, and the ugly.
We're going to have to start writing these down, Mr. Roush.
The good, the bad, and the ugly from Kentucky Eastern Michigan. Good. We got another Fetty whopping. 17-38.
We did.
Cats won. That's what's most important. Kentucky got the win. And I think the bad is that it could have been the 50-burger that the SP Plus called for.
Easily.
Yeah. You don't fumble it on the 1 yard line. And you – I do – Stenberg's hold, I'm not convinced, was a hold. That callback, Kavassier smokes touchdown. But still, there's 14 points instead of three.
Mm-hmm.
So you had 11 points to the board. You get 49. And if Chance Poor hits a field goal, boom, 50-burger.
And then if – they don't have an unsportsmanlike on Kavassier. You don't have to kick a chance poor field goal.
Which, by the way, those had to be some, like, it felt like the referees were just, like, trying to go out of their way to make their presence felt. Like, they called that one on Calvin Taylor, where the play had already moved on. And, like, they're jawing at each other, but he didn't physically.
Yeah, TJ Carter. It was TJ Carter. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Like, it didn't, I don't know.
The thing, I think a lot of it made had to do with the coin toss, the two teams getting into it.
So they were trying to, it was almost like the ref calling a bunch of fouls
right,
like, ahead of time.
Trying to, you know, we're not letting this thing get out of hand. So I think that might have had something to do with what seemed like a tight whistle, I guess you would say, in basketball terms,
mm-hmm.
I guess a football field.
Right.
But yeah, it's just self-inflicted wounds. I mean, it even leaked into special teams. You had Bryce Oliver picking up Max Duffy. I get the Australians mixed up.
I'm pretty sure his parents are in for this game this weekend because I saw somebody at practice who was a guest who had Duffy on there. And it's like it's got to be.
Can't be too many Duffys around these parts.
Exactly. So, like, this upcoming game, everybody's coming in.
Right.
Like, all the kids who are committed. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, it's just going to be a big show.
Mm-hmm. Well, back to my point.
Yes.
Duffy was going to have a punt that was going to roll to the 1 yard line. Kentucky, and reason, Oliver just scoops it up at like the 12.
And it also.
And then you had some breakdowns in zone coverage with Jamari Brown specifically.
Mm,
they gave one, gave up a touchdown.
It's old Chris Westry.
Yeah, that's what I was going to compare him to later on. It's the Chris Westry. When he's in man, he's all right. But when he gets in zone coverage,
yeah,
he just has some brain farts. And so it was just issues like that I think really. Held Kentucky back. I think they really could have made a statement and picked up like a 55-10 type win.
Right.
Instead,
and that's when you can be a fringe. You can be more of a fringe ranked team.
Well, for people, the eye test and just people that just look at scores.
Yeah.
National, from a national lens where they're taking in a lot of.
Your Brad Crawford's from 24/7.
Right.
His eye test.
It'd have been like, oh, well, Kentucky only won by 21. But if you hang 50. And won by, and they'll hold the other team to 10. It's, oh, they won by 40, so they might be better
right,
than I think.
Right. And the ugly of the game, well, it's pretty simple. Terry Wilson finished for the season, torn patellar tendon, and it sucks. Now, we've reached Wednesday, so we're almost, like, the emotional it sucks part feels like it's almost gone, but I think what makes it hurt even more is we were starting to see the Q. I mean, he got hurt in the Q run game, but he was starting to use it well.
Mm-hmm.
And you were getting to the point where you're like, man, Kentucky's offense is going to be really good when Florida comes to town. And it's a firm gut punch, Adam Luckett. There's really no other way to put it.
Yeah, it's something you cannot really prepare yourself for.
Right,
you can get a backup quarterback. You could have this plan, but until that kind of delivers, you're never really ready for it. So, so good thing is Kentucky did get somebody with experience in this offseason.
Yes, yes.
But just for Terry, you felt bad for him. On Saturday, his passing numbers were pretty pedestrian, but he dealt with a lot of drops.
A lot of drops.
But you were also seeing.
There was another bad, just sloppy play from the receivers. He was 9 of 20, and I bet 4 of them were drops.
Right. After week 1, where we didn't get hardly any Q run game, this week you were seeing some of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were going to kind of unleash it a little bit more for this week coming up. Where no, that's pretty much out of the picture now, because while Sawyer Smith can keep the ball for like a 5 yard pickup like he did in the game, he can occasionally keep
right
on a zone read type thing. He's not going to be a guy that you really draw run plays for.
Yeah. But the good thing is he knows how to run an RPO.
Right.
And he'll bust you if you don't honor him. Mm-hmm. But he's not as shifty back there. Like that play that Terry made last year against Florida on 3rd and long, back to the old goal line. And he kind of did the deep bounce and then cut across half the field and got like 20 yards. Like that's not a Sawyer Smith play. Only Terry Wilson can make that play.
Right.
And that's a big reason why Kentucky was able to win last year against Florida.
He had his best game of his career so far was against Florida last year in the Swamp.
Well, and on top of all of that, Kentucky was really good on 3rd down. I had the stat. I think it was like 10 of 12 or 10 of 13. But and that's probably Sawyer's greatest weakness is that intermediate passing game and getting into 3rd and long situations. We can get into that later.
Right.
But I think just from a just on paper, you look at Sawyer Smith and say, hey, this is about as good of a backup you could ask for to come in and have to lead the team right now.
Right. I mean, short from maybe having kind of a top 100, 150 freshman that's probably going to be your guy next year
right.
you like throw if, out there.
Yeah, like if it was Bo Allen's red shirt, like if he was a red shirt freshman,
right.
He was going to be a red, or if Jaren Williams was mm-hmm. red shirt freshman coming in. Short of that.
This is about as good as you can ask for Kentucky, is to have somebody with some experience. I like what Eddie Grant said about how they thought they were going to have to shrink the playbook for him when mm-hmm. Sawyer Smith got here, and they really haven't had to do that.
Yeah.
He's kind of taking it all in. It's kind of a lot of stuff that Kentucky's running is kind of the same stuff he ran at Troy.
Right.
So he's played a lot, some football. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say a lot of football, but he's got some starts under his belt.
Yeah, he played for half a season,
right.
And then he was used in it. I mean, the changeup duty that he got through the first half of last season was more reps than Gunnar Hoke saw.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and I think he's been well coached. I'm really high on Neil Brown and what he does offensively.
I mean, have you seen the numbers that he did with the talent in his first 2 years of Kentucky?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
They were not good, and they found a way to still score some points.
So, for him, this next week, I think you're going to see, and I think you talked about this in your film review this week on KentuckySportsRadio.com, he can throw the deep ball. He can really stretch the field. He's got a big arm. He's got kind of a gunslinger mentality.
Mm-hmm.
If he sees a one-on-one in a 50-50 ball situation, he's going to throw it up and say, trust this guy to say, hey, go make a play. And he delivers those balls with accuracy.
And that was in your Inside the Play this week because
– It was.
That's one screenshot does a good view because you see the open guy on the stick, but he's like, wait, I've got single coverage and a 6'7 receiver. I'm
right.
throwing it to the 6'7 guy.
Right. He did. He had Bolden open, but it was going to have to be a ball that was delivered a little bit low and accurately. And mm-hmm. that's something that's my question with Smith is will he pull the trigger on some of those throws? Because he's going to have to pull it on third downs
mm-hmm.
this week. Will he be able to pull it? But he is a guy that's going to bring some deep ball passing. Terry Wilson has struggled
mm-hmm.
throwing the deep ball. And Sawyer Smith threw the two best fades Kentucky has seen since Andre Woodson was on campus, I think.
In
that first game. And that's the strength of his game, is throwing that fade ball. We really haven't seen it. I think that was something Patrick Toll struggled with. You really didn't see it with Steven Johnson. But at his time, he didn't really have the receivers to run it with. And so I think that's going to be a part of the offense we really haven't seen in the last few years. And I think we're going to see that fade. I think you're going to see the deep post.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's Eddie Grant's favorite deep ball, and we just haven't – they haven't hit on it since 2016, really.
And the thing was, is it was there a couple times between Terry and Josh mm-hmm. Ali, but they would just always be off. One would be running it flat, one would be running – they just were miscommunicating. So hopefully they got in enough extra reps this week where
– Now, Smith threw one in the game to DeMarcus Harris. Mm-hmm. It was well covered, and he – I don't know if he just lost it or he potentially threw it deeper.
You know what I think it was? Like
what?
I think what I like most about this guy is, like, nothing's going right. Let me just chuck it deep, give it a mm-hmm. try. And I think he just put way too much sauce on it.
Right.
Cause
that was his first deep ball.
And
yeah.
if he's going to make mistakes, dude, make him overthrow mm-hmm. people. Do not underthrow.
And then he made a good read. They had a little screen set up. Eastern Michigan blew it up.
Yeah, real quickly.
He gave one pump, and he said nothing's there. Looked. There was no, like, real room to run.
And then threw it out of bounds.
Just chucked it into the stands.
Yeah.
So that was good to see. On film, when I broke it down, there's times where he's missing guys to his right. I think a lot of it is, those short intermediate throws, I think those kind of get away from him. So I think that's something, he's going to have to work on and just letting it go.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're going to see Kentucky take more shots downfield. You saw some of it last week. They mm-hmm. threw to Bolden on a deep post in the end zone, missed it.
Mm-hmm.
The one to Marcus Harris, like I talked about. They tried to get Ali going deep. It just hasn't really worked yet.
No.
So we'll see. I think going against some freshmen this week for Florida and some freshmen that weren't necessarily your all-star
expecting
type recruits,
play.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're going to have some chances. But when we get to the good, bad, and ugly, Nick, I guess what was your big standouts? What was your good thing? What was your bad thing? And what was your ugly thing?
That's what they were. It was Fetty Wapen. But the bad was they didn't get a 50 burger.
Right.
And the ugly was Terry Wilson's injury. Now, I would like to add that another good is actually another bad. It was just the receiver. I thought the receivers read their headlines.
Right.
Mine
was drops. Just receivers and drops.
Yeah.
It was a bad. First good thing was I thought the hot start. Getting off to a fast start on offense.
Mm-hmm.
First drive, they move it all the way down the field. Lynn Bolden fumble, which cannot happen. Lynn Bolden's got to play better than he's played his first 2 weeks.
He also was doing the thing where every single play he was trying to dance around and go for 50 yards instead of just getting like 6 extra yards.
Yeah, instead of turning up and just taking it to the sideline and taking what you can get.
Yeah.
And then that was that. And then I think another good thing was they moved the chains on offense for third down like you talked about. And we're getting ahead of the chains. OL dominated. Bad were the drops.
Man, and the offensive line is really good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they basically got every kind of recognition you could get.
It's a coming out party opportunity for that OL this week.
Yes.
And then bad second half pass rush, I think, kind of struggled because Eastern Michigan said the hell with the run. They threw it 50-something times.
And they threw just the underneath throws.
Yeah, well, it was a dink and dunk offense.
So annoying.
So that's why it's annoying to watch, but then when you take a step back and look at the game, you're kind of like, well, you had a lead.
Right.
You didn't want to give a big play. Let them try to dink and dunk down the field.
Exactly, because to stop it, you need to be aggressive, but you don't need to be aggressive when you're up by that many points.
Right.
So you just kind of hope that they make a mistake.
Right. But they had some zone coverage busts that allowed them to have some big plays, and that's something that must be fixed up. Yep.
It was your ugly Terry's injury.
It was just Terry. Yeah. I mean, I don't think
you can't.
Penalties, I think you could throw in there.
Yeah, we can throw that in there. But I want to move on to Florida, but first – we were lucky that, because the matchups first Florida are really good. That's going to be.
Oh, it's awesome.
But Xavier Peters is coming back, and we were lucky that we weren't recording as that happened last night. He's cleared to play. How many sacks is he going to get, Luckett, Saturday? 3, 5, or 7?
I would set the under. Well, I would set the total at a half. What are you taking?
Yeah, it's the half. But you know what, though? I think he actually could get one, because here's the thing. He is too talented to just be completely put on the sideline. I think he's going to play some, but it'll only be in those shot situations. He has all the athleticism in the world, but Josh Pascal's been doing this for a while. People forget that he's a redshirt freshman, and it is easy to forget that because when you look at him, he's 6'4", 240, and runs a 4.45 40. Very, very incredible athlete. It's one of those things where you just got to tip your cap and be like, this guy can be a dude in the future. But as for now, we're just glad that we have some depth because they were just
Brad now White. Now you're deep at that outside linebacker spot. Now Jared Casey's definitely redshirting. Yes. J.J. Weaver's definitely redshirting.
Which is great news because that's a luxury Josh Allen didn't have. So great news, but I still only think they're going to use him every once in a while on third down.
Yeah, I think he's going to be a situational pass rusher. I think on Saturday, about 8 snaps is probably what to expect at max.
And the thing is, too, is Jordan Wright's been playing well.
Right,
he has. So you don't want
to
like...
But at the same time, I think we'd be lying to ourselves from an edge spot, that outside pass rush. Boogie's gotten in there a few times, but they're really needing...
Yeah, they could.
Because that's not that's really just not Pascal's game.
He doesn't have the same explosion that Peters has.
Well, they're moving him inside on obvious passing downs too in that magic package, like we talked about. So they're putting Wright out there some, and I think that's where Peters can really make.
And on top of Peters, people forget that Phil Hoskins missed the first 2 games, and that's his strength is rushing the passer out of that 3-tech. So add him to the mix. Because right now, Kentucky's had 6 sacks through 2 games. That's solid. That's a very solid number. But it's come through 7 guys. So you haven't – I know they wanted to see things kind of spread out, but it'd be nice if you could have one guy that the quarterback has to keep an eye on.
Boogie's going to get there. It's just he's getting there and he's getting close. He just hasn't got the sack. But I think if you looked up, you know, just total pressures, QB hurries, he's going to be up there, probably leading the team. But with Peters, what it also does for the defense is from a talent perspective, now Kentucky's going to have 6 per the composite. So the composite takes 3 different recruiting sites and ranks players, averaging out those recruiting rankings.
Right.
So they're going to have 6 composite blue chips just in the defensive rotation, blue chip recruits. So you're talking Pascal, Xavier Peters, Marquand McCall, Cash Daniel, Yusuf Corker, and there's one I'm missing.
Jordan Griffin.
It's not Jordan Griffin.
He wasn't composite?
He was high 3. He was borderline. Like him and DeAndre Square were right. Like the edge. And there's one, I can't think of it right now. But either way. Either way, it doesn't matter.
Oates, are you going to count
Oates? Yeah, Oates, because he's in the rotation. That's the other one. So you got they're building something for the defense. That's what we've talked about for next year. Mm-hmm. We think that defense is going to be really good because of all that talent. Well, this year you're starting to see some of it.
One guy you mentioned right there, we saw some bully action on Saturday.
We did.
Yeah. Because I think he can be really good. You just wonder, like, right, how much he can play. And he made one of his tackles was downfield. So, that's why he's a boot chip, as you said. Like,
right.
He's an athlete.
And not just that, we're seeing Mark Stoops and Brad White being really headstrong on playing their twos.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and the twos gave up a lot of yards.
They gave up a bad touchdown.
Right.
MJ, poor guy. He had a freshman moment, if I've ever seen one, where he just got beat.
Yeah, he got beat, and the guy made a really good play, too.
Yeah, yeah.
But you saw Davion Hawkins in there. Mm-hmm. Second game in a row, we've seen Abade Fitzgerald.
Yep.
You saw Stanley Garner play some.
We never thought I'd see
him. Yeah. Contre Mosley, Moses Douglas got out there. So a lot, and then they almost gave up that backdoor touchdown because of the twos strictly in.
Yeah.
And then one of the touchdown drives was just all twos out there.
Right.
So, but that's, I think they're really set on keeping that defensive line fresh. And now you got Pascal with fresh legs coming in for this game. Should be able to make a big impact. And against one of Florida's biggest, you know, weaknesses might be that OL is running bodies at them.
Let's get to that because I get excited when I'm talking about offensive line and defensive line just going at it. And what's really just – it's so refreshing because for years and years you talk about the talent disparities between Kentucky and Florida. And here's the thing. Like, we're not going to – Kentucky's not going to go down there and out-athlete the University of Florida. They're the Gators. They're going to get the athletes in the Sunshine State that they want to get. But they can just mollywop their ass. And I love it so much that Jonathan Grenard decided to talk trash on Twitter. I absolutely love it. Because here's the thing. He actually had a pretty decent game the last time they played
Kentucky. He's been really good this year.
Who didn't have a good game that last time Kentucky had to face Lamar Jackson? I think he had a sack, two tackles for a loss, like five tackles. Sat out all of last season, grad transfers to Florida. And after he said that, I asked Landon the other day. I was like, yeah, well, they got some pretty good numbers. And he's like, well, I don't care about stats. I ain't going to have those stats against me.
Mm-hmm.
This is my paraphrase version, but it's not very different. And
you just threw that bait out there hoping Landon would bite on it. Oh, he didn't chomp on it, but he took a good bite at it.
He nibbled. Yeah, he nibbled on it. He pulled at the line a little bit. But I think it's – Florida's great. Their numbers are great. But you know what? Miami sucks. Their offensive line is walking garbage.
It's going to, for both sides, it's going to be the first real test, I think, for Kentucky's offensive line. It's going to be the first real test for Florida's defensive front.
And between
so it's going to be
Grenard.
Iron sharpens iron.
And Zuniga. And on top of that, Grantham, he just throws everything at you. And there was a great quote that a guy who used to write for KSR, John Shetty, shared from Spencer Hall, that Todd Grantham runs the frustrated Madden defense where he's just mashing blitz every single play and you don't know where it's coming from.
But there's something important we need to remember.
Yes.
With this defense comes islands for your secondary players.
Yes.
What Grantham had in the first 2 weeks was a benefit of, hey, that number one I got back there, he's a first-round draft pick.
CJ Henderson.
He can cover anybody.
Mm-hmm.
So to hell with it. I don't care. So that lays me to play with numbers in the box. This week, you're going to play with some true freshmen. I think Jaden Hill is going to get the start for Florida. He was a big recruit, but not a, you know, ginormous recruit.
Yeah. I mean, he's 3-4 star, true freshman, correct?
Right.
About 170.
Mm-hmm. And only 6 foot tall. And then Chester Kimbrough was a 3-star that's also going to play at that spot to replace CJ Henderson. So what does Carrington do? Does he put those guys on islands? Marco Wilson on the other side was a highly rated recruit, but he's coming off a bad ACL injury and hasn't looked himself yet. And I've just looked up Jaden Hill. He was a high 3-star recruit out of Alabama.
Yeah.
So, and then backing him up is another true freshman, Kair Elam, who was the highest rated recruit now that the original highest rated recruit left for USC.
Because of the
who was a cornerback.
Rooming with the sexual assault guy.
Yeah. Who would be playing.
Right. But Dan Mullen mismanaged the situation. Right. So thanks for mismanaging Dan Mullen, because right now they are in a pinch. We mentioned it in one of our first podcasts how they're really thin in the secondary.
Uh-huh.
I mean, is Trey Dean a true freshman too?
He's a true sophomore. They played last season.
Okay, he played last year. Now, He's good. He needs a safety. He's a stud.
Right. He plays their nickel spot. They call it the star position, so he'll be lined up all over the place. He's going to be the guy in the slot that's probably going to be on Bolden for most of the game. Right. So you're going to see those two, Trey Dean number 21 against Bolden, going up a lot.
On the flip side, they've got another injury to their Lynn Bolden, their version of Lynn Bolden, Kadarius Toney. Didn't have the most receptions entering this game this season, but also I think he had like a handful, like the third most leading rushes too. I think he had like 10 carries.
He's
so
a Swiss Army knife on offense. They just use him all over the place.
He did their Wildcat a lot last year. I don't know. I hadn't seen how much he had actually done this year, but, and also War number one. But Tony's listed as doubtful. So if he does play.
Well, Tony's out. Henderson's doubtful.
Okay. Wait, I'm so dyslexic on that all week. I've been getting that mixed
Henderson
up.
Has an ankle sprain. He's doubtful. He was on a boot and crutches after the game.
That's pretty bad.
Dan Mullen came out this week and said he wants to play, but if he's not 100%, he's not playing. So that sounded like...
Take it for what you will.
I don't think that... Now, we'll see, but I don't think he's going to play. Tony hurt his arm. I think the thought is he might have broke it.
Yeah.
But he's out. Indefinitely. He's out for the next month at least.
Right.
At bare minimum. So, but with Tony, they're just kind of Swiss Army knife. He's an athlete, played quarterback in high school. He's still learning how to play the receiver position.
Lynn Bolden.
Right. So they put him in different ways just trying to get him the football. But when it comes to their receiver spot, this Florida roster has – it's not your typical Florida roster when you look at it because by me looking, I haven't been able to find a five-star, composite five-star that's playing for them yet. Maybe it's on the roster. Maybe it's a guy that's not really – contributing, but it's not that kind of. But you have a lot of four-star guys sprinkled in, a lot of high three-star guys sprinkled in. But at this receiver position, it's all blue-chip recruits. You have two transfers: Ole Miss Van Jefferson, who played against Kentucky in 2017 when Ole Miss won on that last second DK Metcalf touchdown.
I think he actually had better stats than Metcalf, but Metcalf had two huge touchdowns.
Yeah, but Van Jefferson scored the first touchdown of that game.
Mm-hmm.
So he's their top target, but he's been really inefficient at Florida. But
he wasn't as good last year as I thought he would be.
But he's kind of a guy that they'll throw deep to.
Yeah.
Then their other top transfer was a guy named Trayvon Grimes, who played went to Ohio State, didn't play, but he comes off the bench. He's kind of Jefferson's backup. And then on the slide is where you thought you would see Tony, is a guy named Josh Hammond, who caught that big pass against Miami on that deep ball, and he's kind of their most reliable receiver. Number 10. He's the guy that if Franks has a 3rd and 9, they're like, okay, we're in trouble. Let me find number 10 and throw him the ball. So that's going to be a guy that Florida wants to get matched up on Kentucky's nickel. And I think that's going to be a major advantage for Florida. Slowing down him, I think, is going to be a big thing for Kentucky. But in general, this is a talented pass-catching group. Freddie Swain's still there. And he comes off – he's kind of Hammond's backup. So he'll be the fourth receiver.
Yeah. He was the guy who caught the touchdown last time that beat the Cats at the Crow.
Right, and Tyree Cleveland is another one that caught one of those touchdowns.
Oh, God.
And he's there on the outside. But I think he was the highest-rated recruit of the bunch, but he's just kind of been kind of blah. But he's a really good special teams player. You're going to see 89 on special teams making some plays.
You didn't mention their leading pass catcher, though, who has the most receptions this year.
Is that LaMichael Perrine?
Yeah, running back? Well, Michael Perrine, who – I'm just going to say P-Ryan.
P-Ryan, that's P-Ryan, what it is. P-Ryan,
because it's a little bit more southern. Well, Michael P-Ryan Michael P-Ryan was second-team All-SEC selection, really good athlete, who really hasn't done much this year because Florida really hasn't been able to run the ball well, which – kind of a surprise, but when you look at what they did last year, they didn't run the ball very well last year when they still had Jordan Scarlett. And I don't know if this – I'm guessing –
Well, last year, you have to remember, they had a really balanced approach because they were running through Jordan Scarlett, P. Ryan.
Well, but just in general –
Deion Pierce.
I felt like they relied on Felipe Franks a lot. Like, when it gets close, Dan Mullen just leans on his quarterbacks heavily. Now, I did see that in the carries. They actually did have one more carry than pass attempts in that Miami game. Yeah, we ran like 55 plays.
Yeah.
What the hell?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were drinking and carrying on at KS Bar, but I guess I didn't realize snaps they actually ran. They got outgained in that game, too.
They were able to create some big plays. You saw that play to Tony.
Yep.
And then that big throw to Hammond when they get down in the fourth quarter. Miami has them backed up a little bit. Mm-hmm. Franks makes a big throw. Hammond makes a big catch. But, yeah, they're struggling to run the ball, and a lot of that is that new offensive line. Off of last year's offensive line, they lost a first-round pick. They lost 139.
Martez Ivey, who'd been...
Yeah, Martez Ivey. Juwan Taylor was a first-round pick.
Oh.
And then Martez Ivey, who had started forever, was their left tackle. He was like a second or third-round pick.
He'd been there 3 years.
Right.
I think Taylor actually was their second-round pick for the Jags.
Right.
I think. But either way, ifs, ands, or buts, they lost their studs that had been playing there for a long time.
And that was a team that was very offensively, were offensive line heavy last year. They leaned on that offensive line to do it a lot. Now they're trying to find the guys next. They got another transfer starting at tackle, a guy from Texas. They played Texas. First name's Gene DeLance, I think is his name. He plays the left tackle spot, I believe. And then they got some young guys in there. And then at center, Nick Buchanan was a low three-star recruit. He was their only returning starter from last year. So they're just they just haven't really found the mix yet. And it's a group that I think Kentucky is going to have a chance to take advantage of. Up front, it's a big game for Quentin Bohanna, who played really well last week. Big game for Calvin Taylor, who played better last week, but I still don't think he's playing yet to his potential.
Yep.
And then TJ Carter, who we've seen some stuff from, and let's see that camp star, you know, really live up to that hype on Saturday.
Right, right.
Those three guys are going to have a chance, and then we're going to see Phil Hoskins. We're going to see that depth. Can they take advantage of Florida, and can they make Franks nervous? Because Mullen has been ultra conservative this year, I think, because of that offensive line, because Franks can be so fragile.
They were 2 of 10 on third down conversions against Miami. And I know I'm taking most of my stuff from that Miami game because that's their only real quality opponent they played. Last week was an FCS team.
And last week they were slow out the gate.
I think it was, 14-7?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, at halftime. And then
something like that, yeah.
And then they blew it open. But Felipe Franks is a man who stares in the camera and says, I do this, and then goes and throws a terrible interception. He is – the word you use is perfect. Fragile Felipe Franks. That's what we're going to call him, Fragile Felipe.
Mm-hmm.
And Fragile Felipe does not handle pressure well. You saw that last year when Josh Allen was in his face all the time. He actually – I think he moves around better than what Mullen will do with him. But if you can put pressure on Franks, he's going to make mistakes. There's no doubt about it. And we saw last week that even though Kentucky's secondary will make mistakes, they're at least opportunistic. When the plays, when opportunities present themselves, both gimme interceptions, they took advantage of.
The one thing I will give Franks is in two games, Florida has took two deep shots or hit on two deep shots. So that's something to worry about, and it's been the two different receivers, one with Josh Hammond and last week DeVan Jefferson. So that's something. Don't get burned on a big play. Make them earn their yards. And he's completing a high percentage, but Mullen's been conservative. Yeah. He did the same thing last year.
Was it 27 of 29 last week or something stupid like that?
He's completing like 80% of his passes, averaging 9-something yards per attempt.
I think we got it pulled up right here. Yeah, he's 77.8%. And and last week was 26-28.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which
he's thrown 27 passes in the first two games. So that team, especially against that team last week, is kind of a lot that they didn't just kind of throw it 20 times and just hammer the run game.
Coast out.
Yeah. Right. So he's playing better, but Mullen's been conservative. You're seeing a lot of screens. You're not seeing a lot of easy throws for Franks, and then they try to set something up. Can Kentucky kind of force their hand? Can they get them in situations where Franks has to make a big throw, make some reads, make some progressions? I think that's a real key to the game. But really, it starts up front. Kentucky's got to win that battle. If they win that battle, they're going to have a great shot at success on Saturday.
That's how Kentucky won last year. Kentucky, on the offensive side of the ball, 303 rushing yards. They got up in Franks' face. I mean, for Christ's sakes, the game ended with a Josh Allen strip sack and a touchdown. So this gets into the meat and potatoes of the game because – odd enough as it is, there's not a whole lot of like, man, they've got this guy that you know, I remember like Vernon Hargraves. Like it was just like, man, they don't have like a dude that you're just like, that guy's scary.
Every year, I feel like since Stoops has been here, there's been Kentucky's receivers versus Florida's corners. It's always been, God, there's such a big advantage to Florida.
Yeah.
Like in 2015, when Kentucky had some momentum, Florida came in here with really, you know, not a very good team. They only scored 14 points to one. Kentucky just could not do anything in the passing game.
No.
Some of it
all
was quarterback play, but a lot of it was they just could not get open against Vernon Hargraves, against Quincy Wilson. This Keanu Neal, who's balling out for the Falcons, was also on the defense. This year, with Henderson out, you go into the game thinking Kentucky's receivers have the advantage.
Pretty wild times.
Yeah. So can Sawyer Smith take advantage of what seems like, you know, a major advantage? And because on Bowden, they're going to have – in Kentucky's offense, they line Wagner up at the Z.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the boundary. And that's where Quincy Wilson, their most experienced quarter, he's going to be on Wagner most of the night. That leaves – Lynn Bolden's going to have some freshmen on him for a lot of the night. If not, it's going to be Trey Dean.
And that way
sets up for like a coming out party for Lynn Bolden.
And if Trey Dean's on him too, you can – that also should help the run game because they're going to have to pay attention to Bolden. You can use Bolden as a distraction in that sense. Basically take him out of the – take their best defensive back out of the play.
Mm-hmm.
But before I circle back around to Sawyer Smith, if Kentucky should be able to – I mean, David Reese is a very talented middle linebacker. That was a huge omission from the game last year. He did not play, and I think it was a big reason why Kentucky was able to rack up 300 yards rushing. But Kentucky also didn't have Smoke and Rose providing explosive plays. Kavasi Smoke is going to be a superstar.
It was Terry Wilson who provided the big ground plays.
Kavasi Smoke is going to be a superstar, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'm already convincing the folks at the bar to get Kavasi shot specials ready.
People here know, but it could be kind of because a lot of people are going to be watching this game
on
Saturday.
It'll go viral. That is what's crazy. This is probably the best game of the weekend. Syracuse stinks.
In that time slot, in the night game, that's most people are going to be having an eye on. Maybe it's not your main screen at home, but it's channel number 2 or you're flipping or it's on your second TV most of the country, this game.
Now, okay, I wanted to present one other – well, while we're on the Battle of the Trenches, I'll just get right to it. So Sawyer Smith, a big – I think the biggest worry that I have for him where he can get help from the offensive line is third and long situations. Terry Wilson, that was his greatest improvement from one season to the next, is on 3rd and 10, you felt like Kentucky still had a chance to make a play because he was getting to his second and third reads. And
he was hanging in the pocket. He was moving around in the pocket, showing pocket mobility.
Yes, and he wasn't scared to throw it across the middle of the field.
Delivering lasers across accurate passes across the middle to move the chains.
Those are tough throws.
Sawyer, can he – because that's my biggest thing with him in this game. One, can he protect the football? Two, can he move the chains on offense?
Mm-hmm.
Can he convert a 3rd and 5? Can he hit a short and intermediate pass? Can he consistently do that to keep the defense on the sideline, to let that offensive line wear out that defensive front? Because Zuniga and Greenard are pros on the outside, but on the interior, I think Kentucky has a big advantage.
Which they need to take advantage of in the run game on early downs. Because you can do a lot 3rd and 4, 3rd and 5. 3rd and 10, that's a complete different story. And on top of the 3rd and 10 being a kind of a concern for Smith, pass protection is going to be a lot harder because Grantham, he's not going to give a damn. He's just going to bring the house.
Well,
because that's what you. If
what happens though? First play or first series, he brings the house, and we throw or Kentucky throws a
pops one to Bowden,
pops one to Bowden, or just throws one up to Wagner. Yeah. Wagner throws off Quincy Wilson and goes to the house. Those blitzes could come.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see how that dynamic plays out because what was your biggest takeaway from that piece you wrote this week? The Graham versus Grantham kind of matchup.
If you can actually get to the quarterback, then it's worth it. Like all of the other numbers follow how well they got after the quarterback.
Right.
And every other, I mean, I don't. Let me. I got them pulled up here. Well, the page just crashed. But I'm pretty sure that I don't think Wilson took. Let me see right here. Yeah. So that. In the two wins that he has, I mean, two of the biggest wins in program history, the Lamar Jackson upset, Todd Grantham, 3rd and Grantham at Louisville, and then last year, they had 0 sacks and 7 total tackles for loss. Mm-hmm. The game they lost at Mississippi State, Mississippi State had 7 tackles for loss in that game. Yeah, and 3 sacks. So
and just yards per play, 2016 against Louisville, Kentucky had 8.1 yards per play. Mississippi State, 4.4 yards per play in the blowout. Last year, 8 yards per play. It's like Eddie Grant said this week, first down efficiency.
He said it's the ticket.
Staying ahead of the chains. If we stay ahead of the chains, there's going to be a chance for big plays because big dude on across the sideline is going to take a lot of chances.
Ooh, and he has the – I also found the most perfect Todd Grantham picture for that post too, just him pissed off. He just always is mad.
You probably didn't have to look far to find a mad Todd Grantham picture.
No. That's why him and Bobby Petrino were so perfect for each other because they're just so – just the angriest people ever. That whole – people say that Bobby was only successful because of Lamar. A big reason why he stunk afterwards is because him and Todd Grantham just couldn't get along because they just hated each other. That's just hilarious. It cracks me up. But him and Dan Mullen can get along because Mullen's a little nerd. And, you know, he's just going to, okay, Todd.
Well, he just lets, man. He's the head coach of the defense, and Mullen just runs the entire offense.
Yes. But back to where that's how Kentucky can be successful. And I actually am pretty confident in their offensive line. I mean, you saw some of those videos of Stenberg. Like, if nobody's coming, their bowling goes up.
Low-key, Luke Fortner has been really good to start the season. Like, really, I think he played awesome Saturday. I think he played really good against Toledo. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the weak piece coming in.
Highest graded offensive guard in the SEC.
And then Landon Young's been dominant.
Yeah.
You know, he hasn't – I don't think he's given up a pressure or yet. Darren Kennard is – he gave up the sack against Toledo late in the game. But other than that, he's been really good.
My question for you.
I don't think Drake and Logan, Stenberg, I don't even think they've played their best yet. Like, they still have, I think, another level to go to. So if you can get them going, it's an offensive line that can really, 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 really dominate a game.
If you're Todd Grantham, who do you put Zuniga or Grenard on Landon's side?
You just you move – well, what they do, they move Zuniga inside a lot because they play that 3-4. Like, he rushed on
some – he'll get in, like, the guard. Like, he's going to – yeah. Or three? He'll get down on three?
He'll rush against some guards a lot of times. But they're going to try to get Greenard on Kennard, what they've seen from Landon so far.
Yeah, because they're scared. Right. If you're scared, go to church, Todd.
Right, and they got another guy, Jeremiah Moon, who they bring in pass-rushing situations, number 7.
That's a great freaking name. Right. Jeremiah Moon. Mm-hmm. That sounds like an SEC pass rusher.
So he'll be another guy in there. He'll probably be the guy that – that Landon maybe draws a lot of time.
Yeah.
Zuniga's been great, but, like, I don't know. This may sound weird. If Zuniga's in a one-on-one on a tackle, on an edge rush, I like Kentucky's chances.
Mm-hmm.
Where he gets you is inside motor, inside spin, just beating you with hustle.
Quick moves that they don't typically
That's why he's better kind of like as your inside pass rusher.
Mm-hmm.
Where Greenert is more of your outside rush type guy.
But I like that you call him Greenard too.
Grenard.
We're gonna call him Greenard.
Yeah, I know I've heard it. I've heard Grenard, and I can't. Every time I see it, I want to say Greenard. Okay, Grenard.
Bruno, we're gonna call him Greenard. He can get the hell out of here, green, because blue is better than green.
Right.
It's like saying X. Not any good. That green.
I don't know about that.
Hey, Isaiah Cummings, man. He just are you gonna be able to forgive him for beating your Tiger?
Dude, it wasn't even. What the crazy thing was, it wasn't really. I mean, Isaiah Cummings had a good game. He did his thing, but it was just. Mel's defense just overwhelmed St. X. It was really
– ooh, briefly, while we're talking about recruits. I know Cummings is going to be there. Dick Watkins and a bunch of those commits are going to be there Saturday. The big one, Michael Drennan, is going to be there. Wouldn't be surprised if he popped off.
Hopefully they can get him wrapped up
soon.
Wouldn't
be surprised if that one popped off. He's a guy. He's a dude.
He's a true freshman player.
Yeah, he's a one Bowden. Right. Like, just go in and, yep, you're going to play.
Right.
So that's a big one to keep an eye out on this weekend.
But my biggest key for the game on Saturday.
Okay. Give me your biggest key.
I think both teams are going to move the ball on offense. I think the over is going to hit again. It's at 50.5 right now. I still think
it's going to hit. Mm-hmm. I was thinking it was going to be the under.
And then I have a question. Well, the reason I think you think that is because only once since Stoops got here.
They've all been low scoring.
The only one team in regulation has gotten over 30 points. And that was Florida in the blowout in 2016, 45-7. The only other game that reached 30 was because it went to triple overtime.
Right.
And then 14. So
they've been very close. Mm-hmm. Average 5.7 points has been the average margin of victory if you take out that blowout.
Even Kentucky running for 300 yards last year still only scored 3 offensive touchdowns.
Right, yeah, it was 21 points until that last play. But my question for you, and TJ actually brought this up on the radio show today, and I kind of have this feeling too where I could see this game kind of being like the Mississippi State game last year.
That's I think some people were kind of to lean that way.
Because it's strength versus strength in the trenches. And then it was really close for 3 quarters. In that 4th quarter, something had to give.
The dam broke.
Yeah. And Felipe Franks is similar in that he's not that good, but Dan Mullen really has a way of making him look good. Mm-hmm. And I just think that the straw can break the camel's back after four quarters of not being able to move the football. Because if they can't, like, they're not going to be able to run the football against Kentucky. They're just not. I don't see a scenario. If they do, then the Cats are in trouble because Franks will make you pay from that. Like you said earlier, they can hit some shots. Mm-hmm. But I just can't see them being able to run the football against Kentucky's run
inside
defense.
They just haven't done it yet. They haven't run the ball well inside. So you like Kentucky's matchup. What thing Toledo did was kind of get them with quick outside runs that they really struggled with. But
Eastern, and those were only early too. You know,
Eastern Michigan has a bad rushing offense, but those inside runs, we're starting to see Josh Pascal feast a little bit on those, yeah, which is what I thought he would do this year.
The Stoops would say the strength of the team needs to be the right strength. And it's becoming run defense and having Yusuf Corker. I'm excited about him.
Right. And then the backers inside. You get Chris Oates back for a full half,
yep,
for full four quarters.
Right.
Cash Daniel had a good game against Florida. He shoots the gaps. I think he's going to make some plays. So in theory, they should be able to stop.
10 tackling machine, Xavier Peters, going to get all the tackles.
But back to one thing I want to get on.
Okay.
I think both teams are going to move the ball up and down the field. You know, I don't think it's going to be like this. Like that Mississippi State game, that was a defensive stalwart because we had two of the top 10 defenses in the country.
Yeah.
That's not the same this week.
Who's – I cannot think of his name. Is it Kirkland, the middle linebacker for them?
Earl Thompson.
Yeah, he's got the weird name, Earl.
Yeah, it's Earroll. Yeah,
I always say Earl, but he's it's definitely a different way to spell Earl. Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's a bad dude. We'll talk about him next on this week. Pod next week.
Yeah, yeah.
But red zone efficiency. What happens when, not just necessarily red zone, when you cross the 50, when you get into the opponent's 40, what are you doing with those chances? Whatever offense is the best at finishing drives, I think it's going to have a chance to win the game.
Yeah,
we forget in 2017, goals. Kentucky had two second-half drives where if they just punch it in, the game's over. That turns into a blowout. Instead, they let Florida hang around, yep, and Florida comes back, and they finish their drives. Last season, these were two of the best defenses in getting stops and scoring territory. Kentucky hasn't been great at it to start the season, as neither has really Florida, but they've only had one game. And they've only had four red zone trips as a defense so far. Miami scored on big plays, and they played a bad team last week. So what happens?
And Kentucky has not been good in those short yardage situations.
Well, the thing you should feel confident in is if Florida can't run the ball, it's hard to throw it when you get down there.
Right.
But if Kentucky can establish a run with that O-line, they should, in theory, have the upper hand. Does that come to fruition? If the Faye becomes what I think it can become, that's another weapon for Kentucky down there. In that scoring range. So, and then kicker. Florida's got a great kicker. We're still the judgment's out on Chance Poor. And punting wise, the guy Florida's got is really damn good.
He's another one of those damn Townsends.
Tommy Townsend.
God, that stupid family. They know how to punt right. The hell out of them. They're like the only great punters mm-hmm. that aren't Australian. They're right. The last of the Americans. Right.
So red zone efficiency, Kentucky's not going to have a large advantage in special teams like I think they'll have in a lot of games this season. But when in the return department, Florida doesn't have really anybody that scares you. Now, in the past, Freddie Swain's had some success returning punts, but nothing near what Lynn Bowden does. So Lynn Bowden's going to have a chance to impact the game returning-wise, but he might not get many return opportunities because they're going to kick the ball in the end zone a lot, and that punter's really good.
Oh, Whoopi wants to get on the podcast.
Whoopi's excited for Saturday.
Oh, she can't wait to watch the Cats beat the Gators. Do you have an official prediction yet, or are you still mulling it over?
I'm mulling. You know, it's only Wednesday.
Dan mulling it over.
Right now, I just look at it. Florida's had all offseason and really kind of since before Labor Day, they've been preparing for this game.
Right, right.
So I think they have a lot going.
But one thing we didn't mm-hmm. mention is, A, Eddie Green threw the freaking kitchen sink in the film room in that first half.
But at the same time, I think Mullen on the other side is going to have some trick plays he's going to throw at Kentucky, too.
That's true. Also, they've never seen Sawyer Smith. I'm sure they're going back and looking at Troy. Oh, yeah. I'm sure
that's what Mullen said at his Monday press conference. He said, you know, talked about Terry being out. He said, yeah, we're gonna go have to find some film from Troy. Made it seem like they really haven't looked at him yet.
Yeah.
It happened so fast that they're going to have to go find some film.
And Terry's news didn't come out till Sunday night. Mm-hmm. So that's where Sawyer Smith is an X factor. The thing that I like about Sawyer Smith is he's confident enough that none of this will bother him. He can play aggressive, and it's no sweat off his brow.
Back to
you just have to keep him in comfort. You, you want to keep him in comfortable situations. And the one thing I was surprised that we didn't hear from the offense when talking about is the message that, well, Terry's out. Well, everybody needs to step up. The thing is Terry had the best supporting cast he's had in a long, like, that Kentucky's been able to provide in a long time for a quarterback. And we mentioned in the preseason that Sawyer Smith was Stephen Johnson-esque and that they share similar physical traits. Now, mentally, obviously, Stephen, he put the team on his back. Dan Chopper, one of the fastest, hardest-hitting safeties in the league.
Yeah.
And we have to see if Smith has that in him because he can throw the deep ball. He can get you runs when he needs to. And he's not afraid. Even more so, he has more experience than Stephen did. He played.
Yeah, absolutely.
He won a bowl game and threw four touchdowns in a bowl game last year. So
he played in the de facto conference championship game at App State last year.
Yes.
And then, but overall, like, if you're if you make a living betting sports and you live out in Vegas, you have this nice villa, you're betting on Kentucky. You weren't betting on them specifically for Terry Wilson. You're betting on them for Stoops as, you know, playing above their head, sometimes as a dog.
All the time as a dog. Yeah. Except when they're playing the Bulldogs.
They run the ball. They eat the clock. They play good defense. And they rise to the challenge in these underdog moments. So, I don't think, like, without Terry, it stinks. I think it doesn't change. But I still think Kentucky, like, you're going to get Kentucky's A game on Saturday. Yeah. I really do believe that.
Oh, man. I'm just so excited because that atmosphere is going to be absolutely electric. I'm worried about you, Adam Luckett. I'm worried that you might.
We're gonna have some fun.
You might need to be restrained at some point in the stands.
Yeah, usually in the first quarter, first half, I'll be rearing to go. Ref will make a call. I'll get ref stinks hat on.
Oh yeah. Wait. So are you one of those that like complains the whole time, or is like? Me, it's one call.
Yeah,
that's so obscure, but I lose my freaking mind.
It can be both. I've gone to where it's one call or where it's like a multiple, like, we can't, you know.
In mine, it like upsets me to my core. I'm like, how can you be this bad at your job? I don't care how many typos I make, they're not as bad as this. This is a incompetence. How can you hire him?
And then come second half, then I'll start, the nervous will start to kick in.
You'll just be like, real quiet.
Yeah. Then, oh, like all my pregame superstitions start to weigh heavily.
Man, I've got
to
figure out I have a couple of pregame superstitions in general. I can't figure out my third down one. Last year, it was just a simple all caps toot for when they had the call toot on the live block. Well, the problem is I haven't found a good groove where they're consistently getting stops on third down. Mm-hmm. So I've got to. I need some help on the live blog finding a good toot, an appropriate toot, because last year's toot isn't working. Josh Allen is there to make the tootier. So I think it would help for you fans to get crazy. I know it's going to be an absolutely crazy day. And you know what? We mentioned earlier, the great part is most of the other games stink. So like Kentucky's going to be under the
game.
Bright spotlight. The players, what I think is important too, is the last time this game happened in Kentucky just as evenly matched, if not better at that time, against a bad Jim McElwain team. Kentucky got the monkey off their back.
Yeah.
The significance of that, especially in close games, you're going to see a much more confident team than you ever saw going up against Florida before.
And since 2016, Mullen and Stoops have pretty much identical records.
Which is pretty wild.
I tweeted out a stat earlier. Stoops has one game better in SEC play. Mullen one game better overall.
He has one Stoops more has top one 25. More top,
or Stoops, I think Mullen has one more top 25.
Yeah, he's got five and Stoops has four.
Right. So they've been, you know, dead even pretty much for the last few years. So it's just two. I think if these teams played on a neutral site 100 times, I think Florida would win like maybe a little over 50. I think Florida's
52 or yeah, 3.
That's how close I think it
yeah,
is.
Yeah. Especially with the kind of scenario and the way it's set
up. The only reason I don't really love this game for Kentucky is because Florida has they're playing that revenge card. Mm-hmm. They've been preparing for this game for a long time. And you know, like Mullen, this is now a huge game for them. Similar to why South Carolina's a huge game for Kentucky, mm-hmm. Why Kentucky's a huge game for Tennessee, why Kentucky's a huge game for South Carolina is you cannot, for those programs to lose to them, they look at it as like an embarrassment.
Right.
And it gets, their coach gets a lot of pressure put on him to not lose to Kentucky.
Right.
So now that Kentucky has beat some of these teams recently, It's like, hey, we can't lose to them. So they're, I think they're extremely motivated, and I just think not having Wilson, I think there's some cards that they're not going to be able to play on Saturday that they planned on playing.
Yeah.
So and it's asking a lot of, you know, Sawyer Smith,
mm-hmm.
too. So I see a very close one possession game. I think it comes down to the fourth quarter. It's just what team can get that big turnover or make that big touchdown drive late. And right now I'm leaning Florida, but the more the week goes on, though.
We're talking.
By the time I come on KRC on Friday, I might have a different pick. But.
Which, by the way, you're gonna have to come on a little earlier because we got the Cube on.
Oh yeah,
yeah. Cole, does he still have?
Yeah, y'all big leaguing me over there.
Yeah, we're big leaguing you, man. SEC Network, dude. We got to. Does he still do the Rubik's Cube?
I don't. Well, he. I haven't listened to his radio show. They used to do like a podcast, and I would listen to during the season, but I haven't really looked at it yet.
He had this like computer thing. They call it the Rubik's Cube. Mm-hmm. It was pretty spot on.
Yeah.
Pretty spot on.
You'll have to ask him on the air.
I will have to ask him. But before we go, we got a game time for next week. Adam Lockett.
4 p.m.
And it's perfect. You know why?
Bourbon and beyond.
Oh, yeah. That night, going to get to after the Cats beat the Bulldogs down in Starkville for like the first time since like 2010, I think. It's been a long time since Kentucky's won. Sylvester Croom, I think, was the coach the last time they won at Starkville. Kentucky's going to get the win, and we're going to get to celebrate by watching Robert Plant Hall & Oates. And one of you all out there is going to get to listen to them, too. I've got a pair of weekend passes. So that means Friday night, we can go see Joan Jett, Nathaniel Ratliff, the Night Sweats. Then, like I said, John Fogerty might be Sunday. The lineup is absolutely insane, folks. And you need to be there. And to be there, it's pretty simple. So I need you to subscribe to 11 Personnel. And if you're listening to also, just I would like – I'm going to make this PSA again, like in written form. But to all the people who – are subscribed to Kentucky Sports Radio Podcast, please, please, please subscribe to all the individual feeds. A, two of them are getting taken off that. They got to get that. They got to learn to run on their own. But it just helps us if you subscribe to each individual feed.
Yes, please
subscribe,
rate, review, blue chips only.
Well, and that's how you're going to win these tickets. You're going to leave a rating and a review and just put your email address in there. I'm going to pick somebody at random to win weekend passes to Bourbon and Beyond. It doesn't get much easier than that. The deal is fantastic. The music is going to be great at the Highland Festival grounds. Have you seen the setup already, Luckett?
I have not.
They're
good things, though.
They've got the stages coming to life because Hometown Rising's this week. They're breaking it in for us. The country folk are breaking it in for us before Bourbon and Beyond really gets rolling next weekend.
Hopefully, it'll be a little cooler
next week. Oh, yeah. You know what I found out, too? That's a bummer. Tiffany Amber Thiessen is going to be doing a cooking exhibition.
Kelly Kapowski.
But she's doing it during the Mississippi State game.
Oh, that's a no-no.
Yeah, that's a real kick in the teeth. But that's the kind of star power that we're going to have at Bourbon and Beyond.
And we got... You've got that this next week. This week, SEC Nation.
Oh, yeah, SEC Nation. They're going to be 11 a.m. I haven't seen their spot yet. Have you seen the spot?
No, I haven't heard where they're going to do it yet.
Yeah,
but
that's
you got Feinbaum Friday.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, Feinbaum Friday. And also, KSR pregame show, Nick Roush is going to be on there with Steven Johnson, Matt Jones, and Drew Franklin. It's going to be a party at KS Bar.
What time is that starting?
Three. 4 hours before kickoff.
They should be nice and oiled up over there by 3 o'clock.
Oh yes. I'm really hoping we have Cavassier specials by then because smoke's gonna go off, folks.
You can find me in the red light. Be holding it down.
Red light. It's right on the corner. That's the KRC unofficial tailgate spot.
Right by gate four.
Man, it is gonna be so much fun. I'm so excited for Saturday. But do us a favor, leave your email in a review. Subscribe, rate, and review. You'll win some Bourbon and Beyond tickets. It'll be a great way to celebrate a victory over the Florida Gators and the Mississippi State Bulldogs.
Let's have some fun on Saturday.
Oh, everybody. Man. Go Cats. Go Kroger.